Hey, friend. Welcome to Houston Made, a show where I, Rusty Gates, get to talk with local Houston-based entrepreneurs and business owners about what it's like to be in the middle of that journey and selfishly gain insights as I build my own businesses. Season 3 is here. Finally, we made it. Goodness gracious. If you haven't listened to the last episode, I kind of talk about where I went and why season 2 was only 5 episodes long. But if you haven't heard it, go back and check that out. Otherwise, I'm glad to be here and glad to be recording this introduction to this episode. And we've got so many great episodes in store for you already. And I'm stoked to share them. If you are new, my name is Rusty Gates. I am an entrepreneur and business owner here in Houston, a serial hobbyist, a family man. I sell residential real estate, but then also have a media company that focuses on really social media content, highlight videos, reels, TikToks, all that kind of stuff. And then I host this show, Houston Made. And I love getting to do all of these different things. If you are new, we've got 2 great seasons already of the show released and out. Definitely go check those out. And otherwise, let's just jump into this one. I'm so excited to share this interview with you with my new friend, Beckett Griffith, who is one of the co-owners and co-founders of Seasons Harvest out in Cypress, Texas. They say it's Cypress. The address is Cypress. It very much feels like Tomball. It's kind of that northwest side of Houston. And if you haven't heard of it, it is a phenomenal restaurant, wholesome, local, seasonal, backyard to table. It feels like it's something that should be on the Netflix show Chef's Table, because what they do up there is just so different and cool and grounded in the earth and the garden and all of it. Grounded, no pun intended. It is led by Beckett, who we have on this episode, and his wife, Joanne Griffith. And they've just built something so, so amazing. And it is a privilege to get to hear the story of how they built this restaurant with no restaurant experience to either of their names. Without further ado, just listen in as we hear about them taking that leap of faith to start this thing with no prior experience, the importance of saying no in order to prioritize your loved ones, and the importance of always buying the bigger pot. Beckett Griffith of Seasons Harvest, thank you so much for joining me. Well, I mean, letting me join you here at your restaurant to talk about your story. How are you doing?
Well, thank you so much for coming here and spending this time with me. But doing great.
That's good. That's good to hear. Well, as we were discussing before, I've really wanted to be here a long time. I actually meant to come and have lunch beforehand, and then my son broke something and it was a whole thing. You know, you get it. It's so weird. But I'll say that this tea is fantastic. It's genuine.
Off to a good start.
So, so great. Yeah, you guys have such a really cool reputation. You're out here in Cypress, Texas. For people who don't know Seasons Harvest, what's the elevator pitch? How do you introduce people? If you were downtown at a baseball game and somebody was like, oh, what do you do? How do you tell people about this place?
So we are a backyard-to-table restaurant in Cypress, Texas. And we're backyard-to-table as opposed to farm-to-table. And we use farms too. But farm-to-table uses local farms in the area in principle. And they bring products to them and they use their products. Well, we produce a lot of our own products here. So we have 8 acres of land. How long do you want me to go on?
No, this is fine. Yeah, go for it.
We have 8 acres of land here. So we have gardens. So we grow all our produce here for the restaurant. We grow everything organically, raise chickens and goats. So we milk the goats and gather the eggs, and we have a little living farm here.
Yeah.
Our menu changes regularly based on whatever the seasons are producing in the ground. So we let the ground determine what we're serving. And so we make new menus. Things are always different. Everything's always changing, made from scratch. We have a farm store on site. You can buy local produce that you can count on as being organic and local.
Yeah.
What it says it is. We just built a smokehouse. We're about to do a lot of smoking of our own meats and produce out here. So that's kind of the gist of who we are.
It's super cool. Again, I think that's why you have this reputation. Is it odd that sounds super cool, right? That feels like when you started 10 years ago, right?
12.
12 years ago. Goodness gracious. When you started 12 years ago, was it cool or is it like become cool? Like, I feel like there's certainly a resurgence of this. Yeah. Like, yeah, we're getting back to the earth and homesteading and all of that.
Well, it's become cooler as I've gone because it's become bigger and more robust and more like what we want it to be.
Sure.
We started at a different location, much smaller, just about 6 miles from here. So we were farm to table then, using local farms, didn't have the ability to grow things ourselves, very small. But we've always wanted to be self-sufficient, basically. Kind of that's our goal, is self-sufficiency, to be able to provide things ourselves, and mainly because of the integrity of it. Like, our customers trust us, and that trust is really important. And they know that we go to farms, we visit farms, we have relationships with them, we know the products that we're providing here. And how could we know it better than if we created it ourselves?
Yeah.
So we make most of the things from scratch. So we made it, we grow a lot of the things here. We know how it's grown. We know how it's made. So a lot of it is just our ability to be able to provide something to our customers and say, you can trust this. It is what it says it is, because we had a lot to do with the end product. So it's become bigger and cooler, if you will,
sure,
as it's gone. We love the idea of a farm to table. And when we started 12 years ago, I mean, that's very trendy right now. But back then, I mean, nobody knew what gluten-free was 12 years ago.
Sure.
And so we were doing gluten-free stuff, and we were doing a lot of vegetarian stuff and raw stuff and vegan stuff. And, there are some places in the city that do some of those things, but nothing in the suburbs at all.
Yeah.
We're just alone out here, which is great for business, to be the only person that does it,
but
also is just teaching people.
Yeah.
A lot of it is just an educational process. This is what we do. This is why we do it. This is how we do it. This is what it is. And so since then, farm to table has become really trendy and popular.
Yeah.
There's gluten-free everything on every shelf everywhere. There's a lot of vegan and vegetarian stuff, and those things have become a lot more popular. And, we kind of try to look at ourselves as pioneers of that, at least in this area, in the Cypress area or in the suburbs of Houston, because we've just been doing it, a lot longer than most places have.
Yeah, certainly. Well, it's interesting you talk about the education piece. How much of that was on your radar of like, oh, people don't get it, like when you started out?
It was a lot. It was a lot on my radar, honestly, because we've always kind of lived like that as a family.
Okay.
And then, as our immediate family. And then when we, if you go places or if you go out to eat or you go over to somebody's house that's serving something or whatever it is, we're used to there just kind of being a different language there in terms of what, we eat and what somebody else eats or what another restaurant serves, and trying to order food at a restaurant, trying to kind of navigate through what it is I'm going to be receiving, behind what the menu says, those kind of things. So we were very familiar that it was something that was very foreign to most people. And even a lot of people said that to us when they found out we were opening a restaurant. They're like, are you sure there's enough people that want to eat like that, especially in this area, in the South? We like Southern food. We like fried food and fried chicken and all those things, and barbecue, of course. And then, you go any further, in the city, like I said,
sure.
So there's some pockets of that, but not really in the suburbs. So that was a question that people asked me a lot. Like, hey, are you sure you want to venture into this? Are you sure there's enough people that want to eat that way to be able to, provide for what you're doing? And my answer is just like, this is what I feel like we're supposed to do. This is what I feel like God's calling us to do.
Yeah.
This is the vision that we have, and we're just going to do it. And, if I fail being obedient to God, and that's a failure I'm worth taking.
Certainly. Yeah. Well, and obviously you're here 12 years later. So there must have been some people who were
interested. There's a couple of people. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it like in the beginning, was it a faithful few that were like always here and then it grew, or how did the tribe around Seasons Harvest grow?
So, at first it was crickets, there's nobody, because nobody knew us and we didn't do any advertising. And you know, my background is in ministry, and specifically prison ministry, immediate to open a restaurant, which you can imagine what that pays a lot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then my wife has always been a stay-at-home mom. Mm. So we one income, and that income is prison ministry. So you can imagine our startup budget sure. was very slim. So we're just doing everything ourselves, you know, doing all the build out and painting everything and just kind of getting going and piecing things together. So there really wasn't any advertising budget or even a sign,
yeah.
you know, to speak of. And we had a banner up front and that was our sign for 4 years or
yeah.
something. And so just letting people know we're, and of course, you know, at the beginning, a few friends that come by and yeah. get some coffee or whatever. But honestly, you know, people will find good food that are foodies. Mm. They're going to find it and they're going to tell everybody.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the best advertising. And that was our advertising, which is word of mouth. And honestly, even till today, we've never really done any advertising at all.
Yeah.
It's all been word of mouth because we can pay somebody to say anything about us.
You sure. know,
you pay somebody enough, they'll say you're the best restaurant in Houston.
Yeah.
But people are going to tell the truth. And they're going to tell their friends the truth, and they're going to tell their family the truth, and so forth. And especially foodies. I mean, people like to eat them. We're the same way. I mean, we live in the suburbs, but we'll drive to Houston or wherever we need to go. I'll drive 45 minutes for a good meal than one around the corner that isn't,
yeah.
you know, what we're looking for, whatever. And they're very faithful. And, you know, that's what it was. It was kind of like a faithful handful of people that were always there. I mean, we had everyday people,
yeah.
you know, we had every other day people and every weekend people and so forth, and just kind of became our backbone of who we were. And then, you know, word spreads and more people are coming and yeah. just kind of grew from there.
Yeah. It's such a cool story, especially kind of stepping out on faith and being like, I don't know, this is what we want to do.
Yeah.
And we're just going to figure it out and go. And from my reading, y'all didn't have a restaurant background. So you loved good cooking and you said, yeah, a restaurant, that makes sense. Let's do that. I mean, what was the learning curve on that? I mean, I know early on, again, you guys yeah. were farm to table. And my understanding is on those early days, it was like there's two things on the menu.
Yes.
So it wasn't yeah. like you were preparing.
Exactly.
You know, you didn't yes. open to be where you are today.
Yes.
Okay. Well, what would two items on the menu look like in what, 2010?
No. Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah. I mean, so back then our menu changed every day. It changed yeah. every day for 6 years. Yeah. Even
yeah.
when, I don't know how my wife did it. God bless her.
Yeah.
But so yeah, we would have like a lasagna and a sandwich or, you know, something like that. Just maybe like a hot entree and a cold entree or something like that.
So yeah.
really small. But even then, I mean, it sounds really simple, like, okay, just two items, anybody can do that. But the learning curve is huge. I mean, I've literally never worked a day in a restaurant in my life.
Yeah.
My wife's never worked in a restaurant. We have no business background. We have no restaurant background, anything. We just yeah. literally are like, we're going to open a restaurant. And everybody thought we were crazy, especially back then. It's 2009. Mm-hmm. We're in a recession. A lot of people are losing their jobs. A lot of businesses are going under.
Yeah.
I had a stable job at the time that I really loved. And people are like, you need to stick with your
stop
job.
It.
Yeah. Everybody's, yeah.
yeah. Just out of love stop. For you. Stop, yeah, please. Exactly. Don't do it.
Yeah. Especially the people that have restaurant background. I got the same advice from every one of them. They're like, I got one word of advice for you. Don't do it.
Oh my God. Yeah.
yeah. Cause I mean, there's a huge failure in the
sure.
restaurant industry. It's a really, really tough industry. There's a lot of competition. There's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of stuff going on. And going in the first day, I mean, we're literally, you know, at stores in the middle of the night looking at spoons and pots and what size pot do we need and how many
yeah.
pots do we need and how many spoons do we need and what do we need? I have no idea what you need to run a restaurant.
Yeah.
I mean, the principle, you know, from looking at the surface, you're going to go in, they got silverware and plates and food and, you know, it's kind of simple, but, you know, you got to be ready. You know, how much soup am I making? How much this am I making? How much of anything do I need? What are the things that I need?
Yeah.
No familiarity at all with industry standard or how this thing works.
Mm-hmm.
We laugh, you know, we look back and laugh at a lot of things.
Yeah.
But even things as simple as table numbers, you know, we'd have table numbers forever.
Oh yeah.
You know, and well, not forever, but for a while, for too long.
Yeah.
And literally it's like, this, okay, take this, this goes to the lady in the red shirt. Okay, there's two ladies with red shirt. Which lady in the red shirt? You know, and it's like, you know, just, you know what, we need table numbers.
You know what, table numbers actually solve a lot of problems.
Yeah, it will help us a lot.
And, I assume then in the beginning, it's not like you had a lot of tables either.
No, it was easy. One, two, three, four. You know, we had eight tables inside and we had a couple outside. So it wasn't, you know, tiny, but it was enough that like, you know, we need to figure, get some system to this, you know. And so just, the learning curve of literally starting from zero, you know, and I always tell new people when they start here and they're nervous and it's their first day and they don't really know what to do. And I tell them, like, my first day on the job, everything was my responsibility. Every single thing. So you can do it.
You'll be fine.
You can roll silverware.
You roll some silverware.
Can do it. It's going to be great, you know. So, yeah, we just literally just kind of cold turkey start.
Did y'all have kind of knowledge resources available to you? Did you, you mentioned some friends who had been in the restaurant industry. Did you have a couple of people that guided you on? Or what was the process of just like, I don't know, I got to answer this question.
It was Google it. It was literally zero. And I say people that I knew, basically just people that like, not like friends that I could sit down and pick their brain, but people that just hear about it and have the background like, hey, don't do it. So, you know, everybody gets help along the way. I'm not pretending like, you know, we're just completely lived on an island, but really nobody to really go over any kind of standard. You know, years down the line, you meet people and they talk and like, hey, this would be a good idea for you to do this, good idea to do this and so forth. But literally just start off cold turkey. We just, we wanted a way to be together as a family, to do something that we mutually enjoyed. And we just decided that opening a restaurant would be it. And we're just like, we're going to open a restaurant.
I love it. I love it so much. That I think that, again, we talked a little bit before of just like the point of this. And my hope is that people listening to this, they, if they don't already have that kind of framework, is like, you can just do stuff in this world. Like these, all these giant businesses that make all this money, they just, you just do a thing. And you keep doing a thing and then you change it and get better and then it grows. And the cumulative effect of that consistent work towards a goal can just blow your mind of like, look at what y'all have here. 8 acres, multiple buildings, a storefront. And I mean, I just can't imagine that you had this in your mind. I knew you had maybe some kind of vision, but that one day you would have all of this.
No, this is bigger and more beautiful than we imagined or expected. And what you're talking to now is one of my favorite things to encourage people in. And especially I've heard most of it being here because doing this and just chatting with customers, I can't tell you how many times a conversation starts with this line. You know what? This is what I do for a living, but you know what I always wanted to do? I can't tell you how many people have said that. And it's nothing close to what they're doing now. You know, somebody talked them into following the money. You know, there's no money in that. Don't do it. You know, this is safe. This is a safe bet. You want to provide for your family. Do this. And they're like, I've been doing this for 40 years and I made a ton of money and I'm miserable, you know? And what I've always wanted to do, and it's almost always like some artistic thing, you know, because that's what you get talked out of. You get talked out of drawing and you get talked out of cooking and all these things because, you know, it's not where the money's at.
It's not so safe.
And, you know, one thing that I love sharing with people is, and there's no like behind the scene things that I'm not revealing or whatever. We just, it literally is what it is. We were a single income family, five kids. We homeschool our kids. Again, my wife doesn't work. I was working in prison ministry, which doesn't pay, you do it because you love to do it, you know. And through that, God built this. You know, we have this beautiful property, this beautiful building on this beautiful piece of land. And like you said, multiple buildings and something so much, you know, all these beautiful trees. And we have gardens of organic produce, you know, acres of land. And we raise animals here and we homestead and we have a variety of things. We host all kinds of events out here and just, and it's literally just, we started with nothing. I was paycheck to paycheck, had nothing in reserves at all.
Yeah.
Cause people think, well, you need to start with $1 million. You need to get a big bank loan. No, no bank in the world was going to lend me any money.
You couldn't get one if you wanted one.
No, we couldn't get one if we wanted one. And honestly, years later, I tried to, after we've been working, you know, a while, and I've had, you know, a couple banks, including my bank, tell me, We don't loan to restaurants.
Yeah.
We just don't loan to restaurants.
Yeah, hands down. Period.
Yeah. And so it would be, I wouldn't have been able to get, I mean, yeah, my background is in ministry. We're open to restaurant. Would you give me some money? Yeah, right.
I'm good for it.
Yeah, I promise.
I promise. Yeah.
But I mean, there would have been no way anyways. We had nothing saved, paycheck to paycheck. Just started off in a little bit. I was still working when we opened. I didn't quit my job right away. That was our only income. And we were just working on building this. I mean, it was literally I had to be at my other job at 7 a.m, which is an hour away. So you get to the restaurant, open the restaurant, get all that going, go to work, work my 10-hour day, drive an hour back, come back to the restaurant, you know? So it's a lot of hard work, you know?
Yeah.
But God built this big, beautiful thing through, like I said, it's not some like secret thing that it's because you had inheritance. It's because you had all these people that did all these things. It's two things. My goal is two things. I'm going to be a good person and I'm going to work hard.
Yeah.
And I'm going to believe through those two things that this is going to work out. And there's been a lot of really, really difficult very difficult times along the way, times that I didn't know we were going to make it through, you know, because a lot of businesses, restaurants, you know, they have partners. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that. You look at a business and there's a little coffee shop or whatever it is, and you don't realize they have three partners or four partners.
They have somebody who is bringing money in because they need to do something with their money, and whether it's a tax deduction or just an investment or whatever.
Yeah.
And they say, hey, you seem really cool. You seem like you have good vision and semi-responsible.
Yeah.
Take my money. Yes. Go make me more money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's great. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, they own a good portion of the business, sometimes more than the quote-unquote owner does. And, you know, you have something to fall back on. Like, hey, this has been a really tough month. I need a little forward of some funds to get us through this. And that was the thing for us. It was literally there's nothing else to do. Nobody's coming to save us.
Yeah.
You know, we need to figure out each day. And it was honestly no joke. It was literally take the money we made that day and go buy groceries for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because why we changed one of the reasons, you know, one of the benefits of changing the menu every day is like, you know, hey, we're going to go take today's money. We're going to go see what we can buy for tomorrow to make meals for people for tomorrow and keep doing that every day. You know, when there's tough times, there's nobody that's going to come save us. We need to figure out how to do this every single day. And we've honestly had, opportunities for partnerships. People have come and presented that to us multiple times, which I'm very honored by.
Yeah.
But a lot of it for us is that, you know, we're people of very strong convictions. And, you know, one of the reasons we want to have our own business is because we want to, you know, be able to fulfill our convictions faithfully.
Sure.
And feel like I have the freedom and the latitude to do what we feel like God's calling us to do.
Yeah.
And I felt like the partnership would infringe upon that. Not because they're, you know, any number of them weren't terrible people. They were all wonderful people, honestly. But at the end of the day, I need before God to feel like I can do what he's calling me to do, whatever that is.
And yeah.
You've got to put yourself in a position that you can do that. You've got to take the losses to be able to do it. Like, hey, I'm sacrificing something, you know, but I'm gaining the autonomy to do what, you know, I feel like I'm supposed to do.
Well, and when you have the clarity of that vision and the clarity of the goal, right? This is a cause-based thing for you. You're like, I'm not just doing this to make some money. Certainly, if you wanted to make money, there's probably more, far more profitable and easier ways to do that. For example, as you and I have talked about, my real estate business is super profitable. Like the hourly rate for that on some of those deals is hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars an hour. Yes. But it hasn't fulfilled me in that way. So I push more and more towards the media stuff because this is what I genuinely love. This is what I feel That's like awesome. I come alive. I get a chance to do that creative work that maybe isn't the safest. My heart comes alive doing that kind of stuff. And so, but having that conviction to be able to say, yeah, no, this is what we're going to do. And it might take us longer to get there, but even if you found a partner that was 98% aligned with you, it's like, yeah, we share almost identical values.
Yeah.
That 2% is going to be a problem. down the road eventually. I mean, that's just that slow break in trajectory over years and years and years. This at a certain point. And I think that makes so much sense, because you guys could say, hey, if this is the goal is to be a super profitable restaurant and we want locations in every major city, go get a partner, right? Because that's how that's going
to
work.
It's tough to do it alone.
Yeah. And again, you have to be aligned on those. I felt that way when I got into real estate. I recognized that building a team that's really where you make money, is when you don't just have one person making hundreds or thousands of dollars an hour. And so you've got seven people making that kind of money and you're getting a slice of all of that. But I just was like, the responsibility of that, as soon as more people are counting on you and waiting for their paycheck, the stress that causes, I was like, no, thank you. That's not for me. So I really respect that. And again, as you said, like, there's nothing wrong with the partnership if that's going to get you to where you want to go.
Not at all. You know, and I never judge anybody's path, because that's their path.
Yeah.
And I've lived, you know, probably when I was younger, I sat back and I looked at people. I'm like, I wouldn't do that like that. I wouldn't do that. But I just, because I didn't know anything.
You know?
And as you, the more things you go through, the more you realize, you know, all the nuances and caveats to things. And the more you realize, like, hey, you know, I respect everybody's situation, and, you know, you do your thing and you follow your convictions, and and I'm going to follow mine.
Yeah. So much of, there is some certain relativity to life. Like, pain is relative. I think it's like, oh, I don't know. Like, what hurts to me might not hurt to you. You've probably been through a lot worse. And I think giving people that credit, you know, I think it goes a long way in building those relationships. It's funny you talk about the putting in the work, the hard work, being a good man and also working hard. And I think that a part of that, I'm really interested to know where that kind of perspective came from for you, because when you talk about, okay, we're getting up the wee hours of the morning to open up a restaurant, which is not super glamorous. Again, you're folding silverware, you're cleaning tables, you're reordering chairs, you're finding stuff that didn't get swept up from the night before. All of that stuff. And then you're going to work in prison ministry all day in town after commuting in Houston, by the way. When you talk about all of that, it has to be a lifestyle, right? It is you've changed the way your mind works. I was talking to a buddy of mine who served in the Navy on a nuclear submarine, right? Underwater, fathoms below. Yes. Working on a nuclear reactor and it's, you can't imagine the hours. And he was talking, and he was kind of sharing that story with me. And my perception was like, oh, well, that's just life then at that point, right? You're not thinking about, oh, when do I get off? There is none of that. You don't think of life in those terms. You think of life, and this is life. Life is doing this today and doing it tomorrow and for however long until that stops.
Yeah.
I think maybe, I've never worked on a submarine in the middle of the ocean. But I imagined, like, in my earliest years of parenthood, that it was a little bit like that. Like, this is just life. We just wake up in the middle of the night now. Yes. Like, there's no there. Mm-hmm. And early on, you're like, well, maybe we can fix it. Maybe if we do this, then we can go back. And it's like, you just have to throw your previous way of life out of the window and say, this is what it is now. And
most expectations have to go for life to go on.
Yeah. But I think that's fascinating. So where did that perspective come from when it comes to working hard?
Yeah. I mean, you talk about, you know, different tolerances for people and pain tolerances and so forth. And I enjoy working hard. I do have to bring myself back to, you know, there has to be balance to my life, you know, because I mean, I'm working, you know, I was running a restaurant that we just started from scratch and working a full-time job. And I was pastoring full-time at the same time. And for a while they're going to seminary at the same time and raising and homeschooling five kids. That's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And they're just, it is no sleep. You know, and go, and so forth. And like you said, there is, you know, everything just blends together. There isn't like work and life, and it's just life, you know?
Yeah.
And so I guess it just, part of it is just DNA that I enjoy being busy and being productive and working. Mm-hmm. And, but you know, that's not a great thing, you know, necessarily all the time.
Yeah. There's a dark side to
that. Yeah. You need to have, you need to unwind. Like, you know, my wife would have to remind me, hey, you're not at work. Calm down.
Yeah.
You know, get work off the mind and stop being productive and let's just spend time relaxing, you know? Yeah. So I enjoy working, you know, it's fulfilling to me. I thrive in, you know, fast paced, you know, working environment that we're just, it's kind of go, go, go.
Yeah.
Going from one thing to another, doing multiple things at a time. It's an environment that I enjoy. And so I'm kind of, and again, it has its bad things because like in ministry, you need to be able to say no.
Yeah.
And I would never say no. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm just like, who did Jesus turn away? You know, and
sure.
I had to be reminded, you're not Jesus.
Yeah.
You know?
Also.
Yeah. Exactly. He also wasn't married.
Yeah.
He also didn't have, you know, kids per se.
Yeah.
You know,
and wasn't
forth.
Running a restaurant that we know of. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, in ministry, just always doing everything for everybody. Prison ministry is a very high need ministry because we're doing the ministry inside. We're doing ministry outside to their families. There's a lot of need there. I have my own kids that have, you know, have five kids. They have their needs.
Yeah.
My wife and just everything. So I guess it's, you know, for me, it's more like learning, not learning to work hard, but learning to ratchet that back a little bit. That everything just isn't about work. You know, I used to tell people, you know, and it's kind of like a conviction of my own, you know, but I used to tell people, you know, I found that workaholics can be the laziest people in the world. Mm. And you think it's the opposite, but sometimes people are workaholics because they don't want to do the real work of life.
Yeah.
Because being a dad is hard and being a husband is hard. And those things are hard. A lot of people would rather just be at work than go home and be a dad. And so really you're using your work as an excuse to not do a harder work, which is to invest in the lives of those that God has given to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of it, honestly, for me is a personal conviction and just a realization that, like, you know, that's great that I enjoy working hard, but I need to work hard at being a good husband. I need to work hard at being a good dad, at being a good man, you know, working hard on my faith life and making sure everything has a good balance to it.
Yeah. It's a great insight and also convicting. So thank you for that. Some of those things, whether, you know, as a listener, I'm assuming like you're married or not, or a parent or not, you certainly have relationships to which you have, you likely have some responsibility, whether it's to your community or to your neighbors or to your parents or
whoever. To yourself.
Personal enrichment, certainly.
Yeah. It's one of my convictions of personal enrichment that I need to make time for that I still never do.
Yeah.
Because there's personal things that I want to pursue just as a person to enrich myself. And, you know, like I said, even if you don't have like a lot of like external relationships, there's a relationship to yourself and enriching yourself because you can just become just, you know, really monochromatic and you know, really dry and worn out by just kind of pursuing one course in your life.
Yeah. Well, and I think about those things, especially in the personal relationship to yourself, of there's no accolades, right? At best, you get a world's best dad mug, which is like, well, hey, is that really true though? We all know. Listen, we're all living in the same house. Yes. Your best dad, but right now it's just me. So not much
competition.
Yeah, there were a lot of names on that ballot.
That's right.
But I think that it is. It's interesting because it's hard work. It is often can be thankless work. It's not profitable work. Raising my kids will not be profitable. The thing my kid broke was an iPad. He shattered the screen on our way out the door. And I was just like, you know, you're good, kid. Yes. Like, I get it. You didn't mean to. I love you. That is what it is. And, but surely as I think we all would know and assume is that the dividends that pays are immeasurable in other ways. And even that self-care, what does that look like now for you of when you say unwind, what do you guys do? What do you do to, when you step away from all the things you've got going on?
Yeah. So, a lot of it is just trying to, you know, as a family, you know, being home together at night, it was one of the things early on because it's so demanding and we're going it alone. There were just, I mean, it's literally, you know, nonstop work. It never ends. There's always things to do. The list never runs out. And so it's like, man, the more things I can get done of these, you know, it's the less things I can have to do tomorrow. So I'm going to just work, you know, all day and all night. And then that'll free me up for some time tomorrow to have some time. But of course, guess what happens tomorrow?
Yeah, there's more.
You know, the whole always list goes on and just never have time. So just making sure that we turn that off, hanging out at the house, watching a movie with the kids, you know, just doing that, you know, going somewhere. We try to make, you know, it was 10 years we didn't have a vacation just because we couldn't step away as a business. We couldn't step away from and trying to, you know, be intentional about going places and making trips, even if they're small trips, even if they're day trips or weekend trips, just getting away with the family that they know that we're, you know, that we have each other's undivided attention and just kind of hanging out and unwinding and just spending time, you know, kind of having that, you know, sabbatical time together.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love both sides of that. I actually love most things. We can recognize that I'm overly using it, but I do mean it. It comes off as all sincerity. Is to one aspect, I think there is something really cool and special. And I don't know that a lot of people would identify with this, but there's something really cool and special with the fact that you didn't take a vacation for 10 years. I certainly feel the need to try to give my kids everything I think they should have, right? Including like vacations. And my wife and I feel that somewhere. It's like, going to go on a road trip. We're going to get away for a month. We're going to do these things. We see it on Instagram and we've got to do it. And it's like, actually, I'm building for a while, I've been building multiple businesses. Like, and what this ought to provide for my kids down the road and the opportunities it should provide for them down the road is worth sacrificing some of those things to say, hey, you know what? We're actually not going on a big trip this year. And that's you know what? You're okay. You're still loved and you'll still probably be a well-adjusted human being. Maybe.
And if that's what puts you over the edge, there's some other issues.
Yeah. And they're probably my fault too. But, you know, hit me up for therapy when you're older and I'll probably have the money to pay for it because I build these things.
Yes.
But, and then now, like knowing that, especially as your kids get older, to say, hey, we still want these relationships. We want to invest in them. And now you say, okay, we're going to make this time also because when your kids are older, you can appreciate it. I won't take my kids to the Bahamas when they're 3 years old.
just have a picture to remember it by.
Yeah, they're just gonna. Yeah, so I think that that's really special. When we talked about the why behind the podcast, and I talk about some of the friendship goals that I have, like I'm just trying to make friends. I like having friends. I would love to be friends with as many people as I possibly can, recognizing that friendships have varying levels of degrees. But one of the things that I have found is that entrepreneurial journey can be incredibly isolating because when you are working 80 hours a week, plus your other jobs and all the things that you have going on, it's not like you have a lot of time to just hang out like we did when we were 16. Like, well, what are you going to do? I don't know. We'll just be in the same room together and do nothing.
Yes.
But to have those relationships, you have to have some of that. How did you guys as a family, I know obviously you were doing church work and so maybe there's some of that, but then you're also the pastor.
Yeah.
And having been in that world myself, I also recognize it's like, well, friendship here sometimes can be a little bit unilateral because I'm carrying your burdens and there's this expectation. So what does friendship look like for you guys? How have y'all found a community for yourselves as you raise this tribe?
Yeah. Friends for us are people that understand us and we understand them. And it's not like we have to have like these set times that we're getting together because most of, you know, people are drawn oftentimes to people like themselves, you know? And so, you know, a lot of people that we're friends with are also entrepreneurs and they have businesses and they have a lot going on. And so we understand that, you know, like, hey, we're not always going to be able to get together for the, you know, Friday night, you know, coffee or whatever, you know, it's kind of an understanding. They're there, you know, we have friends that are like, you know, more like mentors. They're like, we'll sit down like, hey, I need somebody to unload on kind of talk or vice versa, or just, you know, more like, you know, on the same level kind of friends. But, you know, it's as time provides and they understand like, hey, I've got a business to run. I'm really busy. My family is more important than anything else or anybody else. Yeah. So they're always going to come first. And they feel the same way. So they completely, hey, I can't, you know, my wife and I are just in a conversation right now. So, well, we had a meeting. Well, I'm in a conversation with my wife.
Yeah.
It trumps whatever else was going on.
Yeah. You know?
And so I guess for us, they're just people that are like us, that we have friendships with, that sometimes we just chat on the phone once a month, or sometimes we get together regularly. They'll come over here and hang out, or we'll go over to their house and hang out. And they, you know, oftentimes have kids that are relatively the same age as ours. And, you know, it's like, you know, it's not my biggest, I guess, goal in life is to have friends, because, you know, we work really hard. And then to me, like 100% of my time goes into my family.
Sure.
And I don't have any friends that I go get together with. I don't do guys' night out. I don't get together, and I don't do hunting trips. And we don't go hang out at the bar. You know, I don't have any problem with if you do.
Sure.
It's really not my business.
Yeah.
I don't care. That's not my thing, because I always want to be with my family every second of my life.
Yeah.
We work together here at the restaurant. So our friends are people that we hang out as families together,
yeah,
basically. And that's what I want to do, because you and I are friends already.
Yeah.
But I don't want to go just hang out with you.
Sure. Nor do I have time for that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No offense. And it's the same way. Because I'm leaving my family,
yeah,
to do it. And, you know, if I'm not here providing for them, to provide, you know, their needs and a good future for them, then I'm with them. And that's kind of where my life is.
Yeah, it certainly just comes back to those priorities and having those priorities outlined. And a lot of the stuff that I have been reading, one of the books that has been recommended to me for years that I'm finally making my way through this summer is Essentialism. Mm. And it's often recommended to people who are Enneagram 7s on the Enneagram, which is me. Just like, I want to do everything all the time and I'm be friends with everybody. And it's like, you literally can't. You're delusional.
Yes.
You think you can, you cannot. And it's all these really great tangible practices of, for instance, like priority is always meant to be singular. By having the word, by pluralizing the word, which happened in like the Industrial Revolution, you're completely just ruining the definition. You cannot have multiple priorities. You have a priority.
And that, everything else.
That's and then there's everything yeah. else, certainly. And you can have goals and objectives, but to be like, this is prime, that's a thing, and say, you know, this is my family or whatever. And I think, again, I hear what you're saying too. It's like, you can have that if that's what you want. And you're saying, I want those times out or times away, or I want to take a trip to the Bahamas every week or every month. A week would be a lot. I'm not here to judge, but I feel like if you're going to the Bahamas every week, you must be a very successful entrepreneur. And I don't know why you're listening to this podcast.
Surely have better things.
You surely have better things to do. Maybe you're listening to on the beach, in which case I'm flattered. But I think, again, having just that, those guiding principles to say, this decision's already been made. You're not sitting here, should I say yes? Or should I say no to this? Or you're like, no, it's just this. And recently, as I have been reading that book and been really focusing on growing Rusty Gates Media, I've had to say no to both clients and friends, like previous clients who had also considered friends, on really cool opportunities. And I felt bad about it. I felt sad about it, a little guilty. And at the same time, I go, this is what's right for my business. And ultimately, that's going to be what's best for them too, is me spreading myself too thin is only going to hurt whatever I would produce for them. And I don't think they were super happy about that. Honestly, that they can respect that. And hopefully they can respect the fact that they're like, do that.
Yeah. I used to say no to nobody.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, I was game for anything, anytime, anywhere. Mainly it was a ministry thing, you know, because almost everything that I'm not saying no to is all ministry related things. They need marriage counseling, or they need me to come help them with this, or, you know, whatever it may be, do their wedding, do their funeral, you know, whatever it was. You know, I'm all over the place saying yes to everybody and everything. And, you know, it got to the point that I just really, and through my wife, a lot of it through my wife's like, you need to say no,
yeah.
you know? And I felt so bad. I mean, how could I say no to somebody from a, you know, if it was anything else, I'd be fine. But
sure.
Like ministry, I'm gonna say no to. And I've just gotten to the point that I did, you know, because I realized that, like you said, you know, if my family's my priority, then I'm saying yes to all these things that my family is suffering for.
Yeah.
So I just had to. And there's a guy just a short time ago. He's a really cool guy and he's a good Christian, and I enjoy him and his ministry and just kind of what he does. And we're talking, just chatting. He's like, hey, you know, I want to ask you a question. Would you be my mentor? And and I said, No.
No.
And I mean, the look of shock on his face, you know, because I mean, who says no to that, you know? And I do want to.
Sure.
You know, I do want to, but it's just like, I just can't, you know, I can't do it. And there's just a lot of things that you have to say no to. Like you said, to, you know, you got to have the vision and you got to keep focused on the vision and you've got to, you know, because I got to stand before God. And, you know, yeah, I said yes to a million different things and the enemy knows how to distract us. You know, he's not going to distract me by, you know, sinful things per se. He's going to distract me by good things.
Sure.
You know,
good's the enemy of great. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he knows us, you know, and, you know, he'll pull me away from my family by going around and fixing everybody's problems and being everybody's Holy Spirit and telling them what their convictions should be and getting them out of every problem that they've gotten themselves into. And my family, who is supposed to be my priority, is not getting ministered to.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Well, you've certainly been on a journey, and I mean, what advice would you give yourself? Would you give Joanne at, you know, 12 years ago as y'all are starting up, knowing what you know now that you've got all this, the wisdom and insight that you've learned along the way, what would you pass along when, like, day one, y'all are buying that first pot that you're not sure what size to get?
Yeah. Bigger pot.
Bigger pot. Always need a bigger pot. Check.
Yeah. It's better to be, you know, it's bigger. You can still fit the same amount. It's smaller. It's too small. Just literally what I've been talking about, I think it goes back to it, is not, you know, time goes by so fast. You know, my kids were, I mean, it's been 12 years, so your kids grow up during that time. And, you know, my youngest son is bigger than me now. He's 14 and bigger than me. And, you know, they, you know, everybody says it, you know, they grow up so fast. And it's a slogan, a cliche that we all know. And none of us really, you know, believe it until it's past, you know.
Yeah.
But really not, you know, capitalizing on those moments enough, because, you know, I don't know that there's a ton that we would have done differently, like physically done differently. I mean, obviously when you know things, you would avoid certain pitfalls and so forth. But, you know, like with what we had available to us at the moment, with the knowledge bank we had, you know, and so forth. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of, you know, big moves we could have made differently. It just is what it is. It's just working really hard and doing a lot of it, but not getting up, you know, not getting caught up in the one more sand dune thing, you know, just, okay, it's right around the corner and I'm going to have time. And then it's right around the corner and I'm going to just one more sand dune.
Yeah.
Race is right around the corner.
And then I'll take the time.
Going and it never ends. You have to make it end. You have to, like, make those times happen, because the world isn't going to open up and say, here's time for God and here's time for your family. And, you know, it's going to keep pushing you away from that. And just, I mean, really the only thing that I guess I would have done differently is just making sure I capitalize on capturing those moments, being intentional about them, making them happen, you know, more frequently than just, you know, letting, you know, more things control my path than me controlling my path.
Yeah.
You know, it's really easy, especially when I don't mind working. I mean, it's hard to put enough work on me that I would say enough, because I really thrive. And this isn't like, hey, look at me, look what a great person I am. It's a negative thing.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I thrive on more pressure and more work. And, you know, it's like, I've got to be the one to say, no, you know, that's enough. That's too much. You know, I need to slow down and spend time with my family and do these things.
So. Yeah. Yeah. It's good advice. And I think so many of us who, certainly enjoy the work that we find ourselves doing, that we absolutely need to hear. And it is something that you have to practice and train yourself to do. And time blocking is really helpful for that. Of, if you're going to do a thing, put it on the calendar and let your calendar be like, your accountability and say, it's on there. That's what I do.
And that's what we do now. We block things out. You know, like, this is ahead and it's blocked out and we're not scheduling.
Yeah.
And like I said, we've had to pass up things like events that we would have made money on or whatever. And we're just like, hey, we're going to take this time off. We're going to do something together, you know, because, I mean, you know, it's better to do it intentionally than have it forced upon
you. Well, someone else will do it for you, right? If you if you don't set your own schedule, someone will set your schedule.
Exactly.
If you don't set your priority, someone will choose your priority for you. And you have to set those things and be willing to defend them against yourself, against other people, against, and not everybody's going to maybe love you all the time for that, but at least in my small experience, you'll find that they end up respecting you, which is way better anyway.
and like you said, and things will happen. You know, my wife several years ago was diagnosed with cancer, and a really aggressive form of cancer. And my wife is about the healthiest person you will ever meet in your entire life.
Yeah, it wasn't all the Cheetos that she was eating.
Definitely not. I mean, her diet is pristine, you know, just the way she takes care of herself and from, you know, like natural cosmetics and just the whole nine yards, and just really took care of herself. And wasn't something we expected, you know, diagnosed with cancer and a very aggressive form of cancer that's like, hey, you need to figure this out. You need to figure it out now, because you only get one shot at it, you know? And it was a really difficult time for us. You know, we recently moved over here. There was a lot of stresses and pressures that came with that. A lot of things that didn't go as planned, a lot of, you know, really behind the eight ball in a lot of areas. And then Harvey came, we lost our house and all of our possessions in one day, and almost lost our business, lost, you know, just, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of damages here. And then right after that, my wife's diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
Just a very super aggressive form of cancer. And we're like, we need to figure this out. And of course, we want to go natural path, because that's just kind of who we are. And it's like a lot of those things are like experimental and stuff like that. And because of the, you know, how aggressive it wasn't like, well, let's try this. And if it didn't work, we'll try this. And if it didn't work, we'll try this. And that goes back to what we were saying before. It's like not being judgmental. It's like you learn through that. You know, it's like, you know, you, this is a very personal thing for each individual family.
Yeah.
And you need to decide what you feel like is the best way for your family to handle this. And you just do that. And you're not going to have me telling you what you need to do or the way you should handle it, you know? And the same thing for us, it became a very personal decision. I had to, you know, now have a full-time job of studying cancer and cancer treatments. And how do we figure this out in the midst of our life just came to complete financial collapse and turmoil. We have no insurance. I've lost our home. We're homeless. We're just everything that you can think of, you know? And we have to figure this out, you know, and we researched and studied and we figured out our path and we took it. And praise God, my wife is in remission.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so we're very grateful.
Yeah. And you also probably have a home now.
What's that?
You probably have a home
now. Yes, we have our home, and it took us forever.
Oh my gosh.
To get back in our home. I mean, it was over a year.
Yeah.
To get back in our home. And I thought, I mean, if you would have told me it, you know, it was going to take 3 months, I'd have been like, there's no way it's going to take long. Put on some sheetrock, put new sheetrock back in.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it's not, I mean, you lose every single thing you own, all the appliances, all the cabinets, everything comes out.
Yeah.
And again, we're already in financial turmoil at that point in our lives. And it just, it's just literally just
so much,
man. Every little bitty thing at a time, just, you know, when we have time. And of course, at that time, thank God, there's ministries that are helping.
Certainly.
Churches that are pitching in. And, you know, I don't know what we've done with all that. But yeah, it took us about a year and a quarter to get, you know, our house
on top of everything else.
Because we're trying to keep our business afloat and trying to take care of my wife, which is a full-time job, and, you know, raising the kids and, you know, doing their homeschool and being, you know, not having a place that my wife can just be and relax at our house and going through the pain of treatment and so forth. And just all that. So yeah, just kind of figuring it all out, and it took a lot. So we finally got our house rebuilt, praise God. I'm back home and I'm in remission and business, you know. Then right after that, it's funny because literally my wife was told she was in remission February of 2020. And I'm like, you know what? We've got all these things behind us.
Yeah.
We can move forward finally. March of 2020, COVID, you have to shut your business down. Like we just got
it going out. We're just getting there.
Yeah. So then we did the COVID shuffle like everybody else.
And
praise God, you know, a lot of businesses closed down.
Yeah.
And, you know, praise God, we're here, you know?
Yeah. Well, man, what a journey. And, there's so much of that I want to just keep diving into, but also no, you've got a lot of things to do, and neither one of us can be here all day. So, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing some of your journey. Seasons Harvest out here in Cyprus. Anything else you want to share? Anybody wants to come check out the restaurant or the shop or the animal? They can come.
I mean, obviously, we would love anybody to come out. We we love, I mean, hospitality has been a big thing for us. One of the reasons why we opened the restaurant, you know, I was in ministry for a long time and we always were having people over our house and cooking and all that. And we just love, you know, having people over and it's like we're inviting them into our home.
Yeah.
And, you know, Saturdays are my favorite around here. Of course, it's super, super busy. But I love the fact that families come and they'll have lunch and they'll walk around with their kids.
Yeah.
And they're looking at the chickens and they're petting the goats and just, you know, they're experiencing farm life because a lot of people haven't.
Yeah.
And yeah, just coming out and just kind of being a part of the experience of being here and checking out the farm. And we're really transparent here. We let people walk around and like see our farm. We're really proud of what we do and visit the shop, and you can come by. You know, when restaurants or when the stores were out of things, honestly, we were fully stocked. We had farmers delivering to us. You know, we're full of organic, you know, fresh farm meats and produce that we grew here and all kinds of homestead goods. And so you can come out and do your shopping, come have a meal, come visit the farm. You know, so we, you know, we want to be a place in this community that, that people feel like they're home and, you know, it's an important part of their lives. And honestly, it's one of the things that I love. I mean, we've been in business for 12 years, so we've seen a lot of transition and people that came here, and they were single and then they're married and they have kids and they're bringing their kids here. And it's, they're like, so many people have told us like, and I love this, they're like, Seasons Harvest is nostalgic for us.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I've been coming here my whole life. I came here with my parents and now I'm an adult and I have my own kids and I'm bringing my kids here. You know, and it's not, you know, it's not a 30-year business, but it's long enough that it spans transitions of people's lives. And so I love it when we get to be a part of that life with people. That just, it's so cool for us.
Love it, man. Well, we'll certainly push people your way. Thank you again. And maybe we'll do this again one day. A huge thank you to Beckett and to you for listening to this episode of Houston Made. I really do hope that walking away from this one, you realize that you can just do anything. You don't have to have it all figured out, but you do have to be willing to figure it out. Nonetheless, you've got this. If you haven't done so already, go find Seasons Harvest on Instagram at seasons.harvest, where you can see some of the beautiful dishes that they prepare on their ever-changing menu and see some of the upcoming events that they do, like special multi-course dinners prepared by various chefs. You can also visit their website, seasonsharvest.farm, and I seriously recommend that you go check them out, go walk around the farm, and say hi to Beckett. As I mentioned up top, if this is your first time tuning in, we have interviews with entrepreneurs from all kinds of backgrounds in our previous seasons, including winemakers, leather workers, fitness trainers, and more. If you're interested in connecting further, you can find me on Instagram at Rusty J. Gates or the show at Houston Made Podcast. Let's be friends. Houston Made is hosted by me, Rusty Gates. Scheduled, coordinated, and edited in collaboration with Megan Holstein. Special thanks goes out to Luke Bronner with Million Media for continued support of the show and to Mac Ryan Creative for collaboration on our artwork. Credit for our theme music goes to Old Friends, New Friends. Houston Made is glad to be a part of the Million Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers. We are people who care deeply about human connection, and in our neighborhood, we find that connection by hearing and appreciating one another's stories and by sharing our own. To find more shows made by amazing storytellers from all kinds of backgrounds, visit milieumedia.com.